No Direction and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Oh, all right. Hello, folks. Welcome to the Secrets of the Pack Worlds seminar. I hope we didn't just say anything that we weren't supposed to say. I didn't know our mics were live. Secrets. I'm Mark Moreland. I am Paizo's franchise manager. So I work closely with both our editorial team and our licensees to ensure that there is consistency in both our brands in all of its iterations. Would everyone else like to introduce themselves?
I'm Joe Pasidi, a Starfinder developer.
I'm Jason Keeley, also a Starfinder developer.
I'm Rob McCreary, the creative director for Starfinder.
Also known as Robert G. McCreary in Starfinder products.
Yes.
That'll be one of the secrets.
Yes.
That's one of the secrets. Yeah. Robert G. McCreary goes by Rob. is this the first year we've done a Secrets of the Pack Worlds? We didn't do one last year, did we?
Not at Gen Con. We did Secrets of Pack Worlds at PaizoCon.
At PaizoCon, yeah. We've been doing a Secrets of Galarian seminar now for 10 years. And one of the things that that we always like to preface with is the role that secrets play both within our settings and within role-playing games in general. And so just to set some ground rules, we're not going to tell you where Galarian is. We're not going to tell you what caused the gap. You know, there are different levels of secrets in any RPG setting, and the foundational ones are there to provide a consistent question that you can always go to for inspiration. So if we were to explain the gap, that's going to get rid of a lot of potential stories that both we can tell and that GMs can tell, that characters can tell as their characters explore those mysteries. That's the thing that we try not to do. You know, we often hint at those, but and while we might know the answers to the large questions, we're also in no rush to answer them, either in print or in seminars, simply because once we answer them, we have to come up with a new foundational question to really underpin the entire setting.
We are far too lazy to do that.
Yes. Yeah. No, we have too many books that we have to publish on too regular a schedule to bother with that. Joe, did you
tack on to that? We also have Starfinder Society, right? That
yes.
can revolve around such secrets. And
yeah, I mean, the whole thing this year is...
Scoured Stars.
The Scoured Stars. I mean, the secret of that is 2 years' worth of Pathfinder Society adventures. Starfinder
adventures.
Sorry. I'm dating myself. It's a new game that I'm still not conditioned to say instinctively, but yes. That's why I'm going to let these guys do most of the answering, because they're actively working on the game, and I just have to make sure that things that they say are recorded for posterity so that we don't have a licensee that, contradicts them. So, it's mostly a Q&A thing. We'll be taking some from the Twitch stream. Hello, Twitch streamers. I guess the camera's over there. Hi. So what questions do we have? Yeah, here with the blanket.
Actually, I have several questions.
Uh-huh. Let's just do one, and then we'll go around.
Fine, we'll do one. This revolves around a certain noteworthy NPC that was in Galarian and is one of the first to travel the stars. Where is Baba Yaga in Starfinder?
Okay, the question is about where is Baba Yaga in Starfinder?
You did a lot of work on
that.
Yeah, Rob.
If I had to say, she's probably back on Earth. But, you know, one of the things is obviously there's a whole lot of content from Pathfinder, and some of that has repercussions in Starfinder. But it's impossible to sort of bring everything and deal with that. One of the things we've talked about Starfinder as being the sort of an alternate future of Galarian and Pathfinder. And basically, what it means is if we haven't talked about something, it's kind of left for GMs to do. I mean, I think she has a connection with Irisin on Galarian and Pathfinder. Galarian is not in Starfinder.
She has a connection to Triaxis.
She does have some connection to Traxxas, you're right. But we have, so far, we don't have any plans to do anything with Baba Yaga. And it's, I think probably we won't, just because, I don't know, it's just like that's more of an Earth-based thing, and Earth is not anywhere near the Pact Worlds. So
there's also that race of space hags. I can't remember the name.
Void hags.
Void hags. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The hags have always been connected to Baba Yaga. So
yeah, we could. We haven't really done much with Baba Yaga yet, but we've also we've only been out for a year, so we could do something, but I don't know if we will.
Yeah. Until then, she's wherever you need her to be.
Or wherever you don't want her to be. Next question.
That killed all
that
other
was
questions.
The, oh, that was the only question? Here in the Hawaiian shirt.
Carefully word the question, because I'm not trying to lead you down into something that you don't want to go. I get that part. But out of the four of you, do you know where Galarian is?
The question is, out of the four of us, do we know where Galarian is?
And then I'll give you an out if you want. is it like the Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe where there's four different parts and they bring it all together?
No, it's not like the Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe. I mean, in general, and I'm more involved on the Pathfinder side than the Starfinder side, but we know basic answers to the major questions so that we don't contradict ourselves internally, but that answer is always in flux. Until we publish it, we can always change it. So we have ideas about it, and you know, someday we may want to do that. So we have to make sure that we're consistent until that point, put Easter eggs in and things like that. But
Galarian is where Pathfinder is set, and so it's kind of that's Pathfinder's playground, and we don't want to play in their playground because that can create all sorts of complications. You know, like if you're playing something and you blow up Galarian in your world, well, now we can't play Starfinder because there's no Galarian. Well, you can, actually, because Galarian's not in Starfinder. So, but what Mark said, I think, is very accurate. I mean, we do have some ideas about those things, but we also want to be open for new ideas, or we have some plot line that comes forward, like, oh, but what if this, this, and this? And being able to be flexible and change that just even internally is...
That was the purpose of the gap, too, right? To keep the two timelines...
Right. And that's kind of sort of the meta reason, but it also serves as one of these big mysteries that GMs can play with, that we can play with, and sort of, you know, what little bits can we get from the gap?
Do you know, Joe?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Me too. I know what it is too. Yeah, yeah. Me also knows.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing, is that Paizo's a big company, and people come and go from the job, and while we trust people to be professional, at the same time, we don't want dozens of people knowing the secrets, so that's typically a very small group that knows all the answers. It's usually, you know, creative director for each game and their trusted confidants.
Joe's putting forth a little.
Joe, what are you writing on the thing?
Just a number.
Just a random number.
I like numbers.
With a lot of zeros. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I feel like the creative director could override any answer that Joe gave, though. So you better give him a portion
of that money. All right. Other questions?
Unless you split it with me.
I don't pretend to know anything either about Starfinder or Pathfinder. I just kind of am starting to read up on Starfinder.
Welcome.
Hi. But my main question is, with your Pathfinder game and how, like, there are certain connections to one thing and certain connections to the other thing, but what made you decide to use Pathfinder as a basis for Starfinder rules, I guess, would be the main question. Or, like, the settings and stuff like that.
The question is when developing Starfinder, what helped us make the decision to base it on Pathfinder, both in terms of rules and setting?
So for setting wise, at least, and I don't want to monopolize if other people want to talk, but we did a book for Pathfinder called Distant Worlds that described the solar system that Galarian was in. And so we already had a solar system with planets that had cool stuff. So it was like, well, we're doing this sort of alternate future of Pathfinder. We have the solar system. Let's update the solar system to the future now. And, you know, and set it, because that way it's for people like you that are new to both, it's just like, well, here's the setting. But for people coming over from Pathfinder, there may be a little bit of familiarity that helps tie them into that. And it gave us a good sort of baseline setting.
No, there's sort of a similar, I guess a similar answer for like the system stuff. We have this system that we've been working, you know, the Pathfinder, it existed for 8 years at that point, and so we decided like we can take this and make it more about what a science fantasy game is about. Probably a lot easier than creating one from scratch.
If you've already got a wheel, it's much easier to build a cart. So, Dan, is there a question from from the web?
Yeah, I've got a question from Raxiel. Now that goblins are a core race in Pathfinder 2.0, which technically is the Pathfinder playtest.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah.
will we see any good goblins in Starfinder?
So that question from Raxiel, you said? Hi, Raxiel. Thanks for watching the stream. The question was, now that goblins are a core race in the Pathfinder playtest, will we see good goblins in Starfinder?
We have space goblins that already that have racial traits on them. So, you know, your PCs can be certainly the good space goblins if that's what you want. If the GM lets you, and you know, I think in Pathfinder, I don't know if that's exactly true, but like every once in a while in earlier adventure paths, there might have been a good goblin showing up. That might not be true at all.
The only good goblin is a dead goblin. Never mind. I'm sorry.
So there's plenty of good goblins then. Well, there's been a lot of goblin murder.
Yeah, only the good ones are left. Yeah.
Spiraling.
This is the kind of thing that it's like. We don't have like plans like this is the adventure where we're going to put a good goblin in, but it's also the kind of thing that if we had the really a good idea and we're like, hey, we want to make a goblin good. I mean, in the it's maybe a bit of a spoiler, but in the first adventure path, you do early on run into some goblins that they're not necessarily good, but they're friendly and helpful, or they could be if you don't kill them. So
well, those were Skittermanders.
Yeah, so it's like we kind of want to leave it open, too. You know, it's like there's so many alien races in Starfinder that not everything is automatically a monster, and that even holds true to space goblins, I think. So, you know, we kind of like doing things, or at least I do in the adventures, like to make it... there's not only one way to deal with an encounter in a lot of ways, and sometimes, I mean, I'm saying all sorts of things. Sometimes you have to fight, but there's other encounters where you can fight, you can talk with them and interact with them, and
just about, you know, like Rob said, any species could potentially be a PC race, you know, or at least a lot of them can. So if we present goblins always as monsters, then one of the PCs could also be a goblin, so there's a little more gray area in there. Up in front.
So when you level up, I know you can get more stamina, but how would you get more hit points to go with the stamina?
Rules question here about when you level up, you get more stamina. How do you get more hit points?
You do get more hit points as you level up, too. You get hit points from your species at the very first level one time, but your class will give you hit points also every level. So pick a soldier and get lots of hit points.
You get the same number of hit points as you get stamina points, correct?
Except you add your constitution.
Yeah, okay, without your con modifier. Yeah, see, I know the setting. I don't know the rules. It doesn't affect the miniatures.
There's a big difference, especially in early levels, depending on what species you pick.
Okay, in the cup's hat.
So, going back to this question, you said that Earth is in the Starfinder like galaxy. Is there any plans for...
It's
like
in the Starfinder universe. Not necessarily in the same galaxy.
It's not in the same galaxy.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, it's still in the same... Is there like plans for AP involving it, like in the Rain of Winter?
Probably not, but we're still early on because we went there in Pathfinder for Rain of Winter.
Where did you go in Pathfinder for the listening audience who can't hear the question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Repeat the question.
Yes, the question was, since Earth exists in this Starfinder universe, or at least in Galarian's universe, and Starfinder exists in the same universe, are there plans to go there?
Right. So. We did go to Earth in Pathfinder and in the Reign of Winter adventure path because that was really tied in with Baba Yaga, who's very connected to Earth. In Starfinder, we kind of have the whole galaxy to play with, and Earth is in a different galaxy, so it's something that I think there's more interesting new things that we can do without going back to that well But once again, I mean, if we had somebody came up with a really good idea and everyone was super excited about it, we might do something with that. But even by the time we went to Earth and Pathfinder, the game had been out for, I don't know, 7 years or so,
something like that.
6 or 7 years, and Starfinder's been out for one. So we kind of want to explore more of our regular setting.
And one of the things that we've always kept in mind when doing references to Earth, there's also some in the Strange Eons Adventure Path, because the Necronomicon was written on Earth, for example. That when we do include real world elements, we do research to ensure that it's accurate and it feels like the real Earth that's showing up in your Pathfinder game. And we can't do that level of research with having Earth show up in Starfinder, because we don't know what the future of Earth is going to be like. And so if we already have to do a lot of world building to explain what technology is like on this planet and stuff like that, we might as well just make up a whole new planet.
I mean, no one's going to know we're wrong either, though.
I will know. I'm the one who tracks
not
continuity. Yeah, okay, yeah. Eventually someone will be like, hey, this wiki is wrong. I have a flying car now. Dan, it looks like we have another question.
He was going to ask something.
Oh, as a follow-up, okay.
On the flip side of that, I mean, there's also like the Roswell 1950s thing. That'll be interesting little thing, you know. Oh, that's a Starfinder crash player.
Yeah, I mean, we do have the one thing that you talk about, Roswell, and interesting things to play with on Earth. We do say, actually, that in the core rulebook with drift travel, that so far no one has left the galaxy and come back. And since in Pathfinder we established that Earth is in a different galaxy, with the current technology available in Starfinder, you wouldn't be able to get there, or if you could, you wouldn't be able to. No one's come back, so it'd be very difficult to do that. But all that being said, I mean, you know,
well, maybe that's because they crashed in Roswell.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
the kind of thing. It's just like, just because we don't go to Earth or something, if you have a game that you do something, you know, you're, of course, GMs are welcome to create whatever stories they want and don't have to be restricted by the same things that.
Also, that was a Futurama episode. So.
And a Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode. It's one of my favorites. Yeah, so it's...
So you'd run into all those people if you went in there.
Yeah, you could run into Quark and when you get there. So, yeah. Dan, let's go to the question online.
Yeah, we've got Jeffrey Duke is asking, are there plans for new player classes in Starfinder in the near future?
Jeffrey Duke asks if there are plans for new player classes in the game in the future.
Everyone's looking at me. Well, there's
it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you look at Pathfinder and how more classes came out there, I'm sure at some point we will eventually do that. We have no announced plans for that yet. But.
It would be establishing a new precedent to add classes to a game after its core book came out, but we might be willing to do that. let's see. Let's go. Someone new. Yeah.
When you guys think of stuff, do you typically think of the planet and then try to think of what creatures would live on it, or do you think of a creature and try to think of what planet they would come from?
That question is whether we think about a planet and then what creatures would live there, or think of a creature and then think of what planet it would need.
Yes. The answer is best both. If we have a creature we really want to use that we have an idea for, we would start and then go backwards and like, what kind of planet would this live on? But if we have a fun idea for a planet, we will create that first and go like, well, what's here? Who knows? Let's extrapolate from whatever the gravity or the flora is and what have you.
Yeah, I mean, if it's important for the story to be on a planet with a methane atmosphere, then the creatures that live there need to be able to breathe methane. And if it's more important for the story to have a creature that can breathe methane, then its planet needs to have a methane atmosphere. So it sort of depends, whichever comes first, the chicken or the egg, the other one is the next logical step that you take.
One thing we try to do when creature first is not tie it to a specific planet too much, unless it's really central to our setting, so that you can, as a GM, use it in any planet you want that makes sense to you. So we don't say, like, dust mantas are only here. It can be on any planet you want.
But I want to use them on my planet.
Yeah, you can.
Well, if your planet has dust, you can.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
There must have dust. Hooray. Yeah. There must be dust. Okay.
And Greg.
Settings question. We're brand new to Starfinder.
Welcome.
The packed worlds, what holds them all together?
not like physical.
Gravity.
Yeah, that was going to be an easy one.
The question is, what politically holds the pack worlds together?
That's a good question. We probably should have opened with a brief introduction for people that weren't familiar with that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right, why don't we give a brief introduction now?
And such a good answer for this.
And I'm sure that Parham can edit it to the beginning of the seminar when...
listening.
Well, a long time ago.
No.
Essentially, yeah. Do you want to
head? Let's do it in stages. So
okay, you start.
It started out as the Galarian system when there was still a planet called Galarian there that had all these planets in it, right? And then...
Then the gap happened. A bunch of stuff. And then,
a neighboring empire, the Vescarium, that's the home of the Vesk, attacked.
What are Vesk?
The solar system. They're a reptilian species, warlike Vesk. Reptilian species. Our iconic soldier is
you
a Vesk.
You open your conspectus to the front.
The Vescarium attacked the solar system, and the planets had to band together to defend against them. And they drove off the Vesk, and that kind of convinced most of the planets that, hey, we need to join together for mutual defense, and they signed something called the Absalom Pact on Absalom Station. So it's kind of like the Absalom Pact, or the Pact Worlds is kind of like a United Nations, but it's a United Nations of planets, kind of.
Yeah, so they each
have a United Federation of Planets?
No, never that. So, you know, they have their own governments, and they have their own sovereignty. Individual planets have their own, and there's some moons that might be protectorates at some other planets that don't necessarily have their own government, like Octurn, which is...
Weird.
Will be a protectorate.
And then the swarm arrived.
Some of that stuff, too.
Yes.
Why
is a Vesk here now hanging
out
with...
That's true. Eventually, the Vescarium and the Pack Worlds were attacked by an outside force known as the Swarm, which are basically interstellar locusts.
Totally not Tyranids.
They're totally not. both the Vescarium and the Pack Worlds sort of signed a we've got to sort of same with what happened with the Pack Worlds. They signed kind of a non-aggression treaty. Let's fight off the Swarm together. And they did. And now there's a friendship. But before that, there was what was called the Silent War between the Pack Worlds and the Vescarium, which was a lot like a Cold War situation with probably lots of spies going back and forth.
But it's always cold in space, so this one had to also be silent.
Quiet,
yeah.
I mean, that's it in a super nutshell, I guess. And
loosely held. I mean, is it like the UN today, right? Not everybody's excited to be part of the UN.
Honestly, the Pack Worlds have an even worse humanoid.
Yeah. So the follow up question was if it's a tenuous alliance, right, or whether it's fairly secure. And I think it's fairly secure. I mean, each of the planets has their own motivations. Yeah. I mean, there are the ones that might like to have more autonomy, but they recognize that they also benefit from being part of a system wide alliance. So.
There's also an organization called the Stewards, which are sort of a interplanetary police force slash diplomatic force that kind of goes to negotiate between planets to keep them from fighting and everything and kind of uphold the Absalom Pact. But in terms of like on a planet itself, their own laws hold true and everything. One of the planets, Eox, is inhabited by undead creatures, and they were actually the first planet to sign the Absalom Pact. And so there's probably a lot of people in the Pact Worlds that are uncomfortable with that, but they signed the pact. They're just as much citizens of the... one more. Two more. So that's just some... There's going to be people in the Pact Worlds that don't like that, but, you know, legally and officially, Eoxians are just as good citizens as everybody else in the Pact Worlds and have just as much right to trade and live in other places. So
they can actually live in more places because they don't have to breathe air. Let's go up here in the black.
Can you go into some more detail about how Triune was formed?
Can we go into more detail about how Triune was formed? Triune is the, I guess, conglomeration of three...
It's a three-part machine god.
A three-part machine god. I don't know. I'll let one of you guys answer that.
You know a lot more. Well, I'll start talking, and you jump in because you did write all that stuff. Triune is sort of the god of androids and robots and AI and such. If you're familiar with Pathfinder, you might know about Bri, the clockwork gnome kind of... Not gnome.
Tinkerer god.
Clockwork
goddess.
The clockwork goddess. She's one part Then there is, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember all of them.
Epic,
who is the sort of AI part?
It's
Why don't we let Rob answer this one?
A lot of Triune came out of Pathfinder because it was we need a some sort of like robot god, or we thought that would be really cool, and so we kind of came up with this idea of this three part deity. So we had Bri already, who was a minor deity in Pathfinder of like clockwork and automata. And as I mentioned earlier with our Distant Worlds book for Pathfinder, where we had described the solar system, the closest planet to the sun, Abalon, is inhabited by a race of robots called Anasites. And they've been working for a long time to create this giant AI that might maybe ascend to godhood, named Epic. And then also in Pathfinder, and this is a Pathfinder spoiler, but there's the Iron Gods adventure path, and where at the end of that adventure path, if your PCs do everything right or choose this one way, this android Cassandale can kind of ascend to godhood. And so we kind of blended all three of these together into Starfinder to say, and they're all kind of different aspects. So if you're more about robots, you might worship the Epic part of Triune.
Similar to how Norgorber has four aspects in Pathfinder.
Right, but this is actually, but there's actually three different personalities,
right,
kind of. And so it's kind of just looking in, like, because the android Cassandale, they're sort of a created race, so there's kind of like the creation and the, I can't even remember all the, but it's...
The creation, the consciousness, and... The mechanics of it, you know, it's like the,
So it's kind of just trying to get in all these things for like both robots and mechanics and technomancers and androids and that kind of stuff. And then also Triune is who gave the knowledge of drift travel or faster than light hyperspace travel, the secret of drift engines to the galaxy. And
But we've never said how they discovered drift travel or...
Who, Triune?
Yeah, have we?
Triune gave it to the galaxy. No, so we...
Yeah, it was a new invention, but...
Yes.
Yeah.
She discovered the drift plane.
As a place, right. And then created the technology to get there.
Well, we haven't said... that it's not known whether Triune created it or found it.
Right.
Found the drift.
Or was your question more about how did those three distinct deities become one? Or just more about how did we...
Or more about how did we decide, let's merge, and all three of them did it. So.
They listened to the Spice Girls, and, you know, a single god was the result. It looks like we have a question from the internet.
Speaking of the drift, Spurhawk92 wants to know, when you are navigating through the drift, do you plot the location before or after actually entering the drift?
Question is whether when entering the drift you plot the location before or your destination before or after you enter the drift.
Joe's our resident drift expert on the spot.
Well, I don't remember. That's the secret.
I believe it's before, because you enter into the drift and that determines your course
and the length of the trip.
Yeah, and the length of the trip, and then you pop out where
and you don't. Yeah, you don't know where in the drift you're going to show up. It's never the same two parts of the drift that you go through if you're making the same jump.
Unless you have beacon codes, because there is like Triune has a sort of domain in the middle of the drift, but because you can't plot a course within the drift directly, unless you're like Priest of Triune can kind of give you the sort of secret navigational codes to get to specific places in the drift. But I think even then, not every place in the drift is equally accessible.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, Captain America's shirt.
Yes, try not to push it down past, you don't want to go down, but are there any meta level answers to, like, when I create something and I'm always disappointed if later it doesn't match your continuity, is there any competing technology in the future for the drift, or other? Is the drift going to be the only means of travel?
Okay. So the question was, it sounds like grew out of frustration of coming up with your own ideas and then them being invalidated by actual canon due to parallel development, and whether or not there are plans for an alternative hyperspace travel other than the drift.
So there are other ways that other before Drift happened, there's like the Zahn Kuthites, the Kuthites had like shadow drives, which could have worked on the shadow jaunt type spells. They aren't as fast as the Drift, traveling
shadow
in the
walk.
Drift. Shadow walk, yeah. Something like that. And in terms of so some of that might still happen. There might be some other sort of magical planar ways to do some faster than light travel. Still going to all the Drift is always going to be the fastest method because that's why it's the most widespread currently. And what we have said already is that only technology allows you to enter the Drift. You can't do it magically for, you know, plot reasons, for setting reasons. But I would suggest that you check out the Against the Aeon Throne adventure path for a possible answer to your question.
But we have said, even in the core rulebook, I mean, that there are like the shadow drives, or there are some planar drives that some churches have that, you know, they can go like boop, teleport to heaven and then teleport to someplace else with their ship and everything. But because of the way that Drift travel works, or because Triune basically gave everyone the technology to do it, that's widespread. There's other magical ways to do it, so we may, as in this adventure path, do some of that stuff, but nothing's going to probably replace the Drift as sort of the main thing, because, I mean, that's the rules we created for our core game. We're like, oh, you know, ignore that chapter in our main book. We're going to do something new now. Yeah, there are more possibilities, but it's not going to be as widespread.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another question here with the cape.
Oh, well, actually, this actually like ties perfectly into what you were just saying, and it also ties into my costume. Like, I'll just show you the logo on the back so you understand.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yep, got it.
So for those of you at home, yes. That's a cape.
It's a cape with a smiling moon on the back. Skeleton moon, you might say. And so I guess the question is Grotus in
how is the Boneyard developed in future? How have the other planes developed? Are they like in any way changing? Is the Well of Souls running dry?
Yeah. Okay. The question is, how has the Boneyard or other outer planes evolved in the time since Pathfinder to its current state in Starfinder, and has the Well of Souls run dry?
Well, all the planes are getting smaller.
Slightly.
As pieces of them are ripped out into the Drift.
No, but they're infinite. Infinite things can't get smaller.
But it's a smaller infinity.
Okay. Yeah. It's a littler sideways eight. Uh-huh.
That's something that we haven't really delved into yet, obviously, because, again, it's just we have a whole galaxy to explore, and we do briefly mention the planes. We're starting to.
We are definitely there. There will be articles on certain planes in Backs of Adventure Pass coming up. You're going to see a little bit, learn a little bit more about what the Shadow Plane is like in Starfinder. You're going to learn a little bit more about what the Plane of Fire is like in Starfinder. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna touch on individual
planes.
And
is the positive energy plane? I guess they're not.
The planar cosmology has not changed.
Yeah. Right.
So there's still plenty of soul stuff. The River of Souls still exists. There will be. We may, if we ever go talk about the Boneyard, it might be different than it is in Pathfinder, but it's still cosmologically the same.
Techno-psychopomps is what it'll have.
It's like the material plane changes a lot more than the outer planes do, because, you know, you still have angels and devils and demons doing their same angely, devilly, and demony things, whereas humans and aliens do all sorts of crazy stuff. So,
can I add one more thing to that?
Sure, a follow-up? Yep.
Have the outer planes like adapted to technology with Galarion, or have they always had advanced technology taken from other races that they've been using the whole time that we haven't known about?
And that question was whether the inhabitants of the other planes have evolved their technology at the same rate as the material plane, or whether they've always had access to strange machinery that we've just never known about.
I mean, you have inevitables and iron gods that enforce the prime directive from Star Trek. That implies that there's some level of technology.
And we've had in the first Aeon archive, we have something called a Barakius Angel. And you look at that picture; he's got a space helmet on. He's got a sword made of nanites and stuff. So what I like to sort of like say about this, and well, hopefully Rob will agree, is that the angels and all these other outsiders and whatnot aren't necessarily adapting technology. They're sort of more or less adapting the way they look to the people who they present themselves to. So they're still basically, you know, a might be a flaming sword in Pathfinder is probably a, you know, plasma sword in Starfinder. It kind of is made out of the same stuff. It's not necessarily technology because it's just their own
planar essence.
Planar essences, yeah. Sort of making themselves manifest. So when you show up, so if an angel needs to show up to a planet of primitive screwheads, it's going to look more like them and their weapons and whatnot.
He's going to have a chainsaw arm.
A chainsaw sword, yeah.
Yeah, a boomstick.
A chainsaw arm. Rob, does that sound like something...
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm writing it down. That's canon now.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It looks like we have a question from online.
We do. Do Eoxians and androids come up as life forces when scanned?
Do Eoxians and androids come up as life forces when scanned? I know that androids do. They're created life, but they're definitely alive.
Yes.
Eoxians would not.
Well... Eoxian technically means anyone who lives on Eox. So if there is someone living on Eox, yes. I think what they mean is the undead inhabitants, and undead means not living. So no, they would not show up on life scans.
Yeah, in the same way that a robot wouldn't show up, but detect undead will find them. So, yeah. Let's see, in the green.
I'm curious if any of you have any favorite minor details of locations or societies.
Okay, if any of us have any favorite details on locations or societies, do you mean that something that is in print that people may have overlooked, or things that are in our headcanon that haven't made print yet?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Answer your question.
Yeah. This sounds like a good question for Jason.
Sure.
Yeah, he's good at answering these
sure.
kind of questions.
Sure. I'll give you all a little insight into an Easter egg that is in the Pack Worlds book. In the diaspora, our sort of asteroid belt, there is an asteroid, one of the locations is an asteroid that has been named the Giant's Toe, and that is where there are lots of fossilized nematodes in the rock, and no one knows anything about it. That is a sort of askew reference to a friend of mine's character in the Jade Region campaign, who was a druid, who the player himself was... maybe not as versed in biology, and he kind of jokingly called everything a nematode. I think it started off as kind of like an accident, and then he just sort of ran with it. So his supposedly very wise druid just called everything a nematode. Oh, this giant nematode is attacking us. That's a dragon, Chris. he is a giant of a man. So I just sort of like threw in this little Easter egg for him and that. So and I think that, you know, we get the power to do these little things like that that can be kind of fun. But we don't go over, it's never overboard, of course. Don't go overboard.
Unless something slips through that the rest of us didn't catch.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite thing, Joe, from the setting?
I love so many things.
I can give an
it's
answer.
It's because you have such a big heart.
Strawberry Machine Cake, is anyone familiar with them?
Yeah, people know Strawberry Machine Cake? All right.
I slapped a Strawberry Machine Cake sticker on the keytar that's in the armory. that's a lot to process.
On the arc. I don't know, it's like everybody has like some kind of little thing. I mean, it's in the core rulebook even, you know, it's like I was a big fan of like bringing the Aslanti into Starfinder. So the Aslanti Star Empire was something that I created. And I was like, we need to do an AP with the Aslanti Star Empire because they're Aslanti and they're cool. And
we should still do that.
It'd be a shame to have sent all those books to the printer and never sold them.
Oh, they're all blank.
But it's really cool to have doing an AP which gives us a lot more room to sort of talk about what is it like in the Aslanti Star Empire and that kind of stuff. So it's cool.
Sometimes the Easter eggs work the other way too. I mean, we can pull stuff from our real life and, you know, our friends and their characters, and we can pull stuff from our real world inspirations, like, you know, books we've read or movies we've seen, but we can also get them from Starfinder, which we do a lot. Mm-hmm. But now that Pathfinder or Starfinder has been out for a year, we can start putting Easter eggs in retroactively. So one of those that I know Adam Daigle is particularly proud of is that in the what's the name of the AP?
Ruins of Aslant
AP that came out last year at Gen Con, and so we already had Starfinder done, and we knew that the capital of the Aslanti Star Empire is New Thespera. And we had never really detailed anything about Aslant. So in that adventure path where the Pathfinders go and explore Aslant, we did an article about what Aslant was like. And so we were able to take that name New Thespera and say, well, where do we put Old Thespera? And we were able to go back the other way. And that So that's one of my favorite things, was being able to put an Easter egg for our new game in our old game. Yes?
So does Absalom Station actually have anything to do with Absalom the Island, or is it just a name you guys particularly like?
Does Absalom Station have anything to do with Absalom the city on Galarian, or is it just a name that we like?
I think because, I mean, it is a name that we like, but it also just because we don't want to talk about when it was created and whatnot. I'm sure when it was, you know, like the way when you go from Thespera to New Thespera, you're going to, people glom onto names in real life as well and sort of like name things New This and New That. But the big connection, I think, would be is that the Starstone is in Absalom Station. So it only makes sense to sort of name
it. It powers Absalom Station.
It powers and serves
as a super powerful drift beacon.
It does a whole bunch of good stuff. So it only makes sense that whenever that happened, where they took the Starstone from Galarian and put it in the middle of a space station or built a space station around it, they would name the space station after the place where it originally was.
And the origin of Absalom Station is kind of a mystery. That happened in the gap, and we say, even in the core rulebook, there's a few ideas. Was it a lifeboat for the races of Galarian? Was it constructed ahead of time? That's all not known. What is known is the Starstone is in the middle of it. And
maybe Aridin came back from the dead and really raised the Starstone. And then...
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
This is why I don't get to write for Starfinder.
Well,
there's so many reasons.
It's true that I am writing it for Starfinder.
Tarva Fog raised
Starstone. Yeah, up here in the front.
Might be crossing the streams a bit, but has it been revealed which race or empire ship crashed on Lumeria?
Has it been revealed what race or empire's ship crashed in Numeria? Yes, it has. In the Iron Gods adventure path, the Pathfinder adventure path, there's a lot of detail about that. They're called the Androphins from Androfa. They look very human-like.
And from a different galaxy, too.
They are from a different galaxy.
Yeah.
They created androids.
They created the androids in Pathfinder.
Right, exactly. Starfinder androids were created during the gap, I guess. Or we don't know. So, there's more information about Androfa and the Androphins in that you could probably fairly easily... you know, expand to be a Starfinder race. In the yellow.
All right, so back to the subject of the drift. Every time somebody enters into the drift, of course, it takes a chunk, depending on how far they're going, possibly a sizable chunk out of another plane, random plane, and drags it into the drift. Are we ever going to be seeing the soup getting chunkier as time passes and the drift getting more crowded?
Yeah, so the question is, whenever someone enters the drift, they take a chunk of another plane with them when they go, and are we ever going to see the, quote, soup get chunkier, unquote, as more people use drift travel?
Hecka chunky.
It is possible before the heat death of the universe that the infinite plane of the drift will be slightly chunkier by that point. We are talking about infinite planes of existence. Yeah. So, I mean, of course, there could be chunkier areas that you could come into.
I never thought we would say chunkier so many times in a single panel.
Like when we enter into the drift, is there like a locality overlap kind of thing in our vicinity of the drift that's going to make it more chunky there than elsewhere? So I guess that's kind of part of the question, is whether or not there's a corresponding locality.
And that's kind of one of the things. We haven't gone too deeply into those details, because if somebody wants to do that in their game and be like, as soon as you enter the drift, you're beset upon by demons that came from the piece of the abyss that you did. We want people to be able to do that, but we don't want to hard code that every time you do that, you're going to have to fight demons to do that. So it's kind of flexible, and you know, it's the drift is really only been known to the species of Starfinder for 300 years. So there's still a lot that, even within the universe, the game universe, that people don't know about it.
And I'm going to say something, Joe, here about Alluvion. The city at the center of the Drift, which is sort of Triune's domain, right? And it's where she lives, and it's a big city, and where priests of Triune sort of make a lot of the Drift beacons and send them out. If you read that article that's in Starfire Adventure Path number 4, you'll see that Alluvion also has this edge to it that is constantly, almost like an accretion edge that is constantly pulling in the chunky bits to form parts of the city. So I think this, that in a certain way, if Drift isn't going to get chunkier so much as maybe Alluvion's going to get bigger.
Mark. Yeah, okay. So we have time for just maybe one or two more questions. It looks like we have one from online, and then we'll take one more from the room.
From Skreyu, are there any plans to flesh out the corporate structure, policies, various agendas, and personalities of our core leadership?
Are there plans to expand upon the structure, or organization, personalities, plans of Abadar Corp leadership.
Leadership and all sorts of corp, yeah. no plans right now. I mean, this is, we have so much stuff we want to do, and there's only a certain number of books that we can do. We don't have anything, I think, right on the books or whatever now on the schedule like this is our Abadar Corp thing, but they are the largest, most powerful corporation in the Pact world, so I'm sure at some point we'd like to do something with them if we can.
Yeah, if you'd asked us at the end of the first year of Pathfinder, oh, will you ever do more with the Rune Lords, we'd say we'd love to eventually, and then eventually we did. So yeah, one more from the room.
Joe, did you have something else to?
There's a tiny bit about them as a weapons manufacturer in the Starfinder Armory.
That's true.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
expands on them a bit.
We're always throwing in like references to them. They might be responsible for this colony or something else.
They're everywhere.
This weapon was manufactured by them.
Well, actually, against the Aeon Throne, there's a colony that you go to, and that is an Abadar Corp sponsored, and the leader of the colony is a
priest of Abadar.
Is a priest of Abadar.
He's the Lashunta Ron Swanson.
Right. So there's a little bit. There's not a whole lot. I kind of
made him talk like that too. A little bit.
So there will be little details here and there, but no plans currently for an overarching look into it. All right, here in the blue, and that's our last question.
I don't know if the court rule book actually makes a statement about any of this at all, but with androids being a playable race and there being like sort of like a sentient robot, basically, is the Starfinder actually make a comparison between artificial intelligence?
The question is whether Starfinder, you mean within the setting or within the rules?
Either or.
Okay. Whether or not Starfinder makes a distinction between artificial intelligence and actual intelligence. I mean, they're both, the initials for both actual and artificial intelligence are both AI, so yeah.
Question answered.
Yes.
Virtual and artificial. So the androids only got citizenship in the Pact worlds 150-something years ago. So it was a matter of some controversy until recently in the setting's history. But the androids do have souls, and so I think most modern.
So do SROs, the actual sentient robotic organisms, which are in the Pact Worlds book. But we do make a distinction, for example, the mechanic class gets a drone. They have a class feature called artificial intelligence, and that very specifically states this is a super advanced AI, but it is not self-aware. And that's a distinction because otherwise your mechanic would be enslaving a sentient species to be his little robot buddy, and that's not cool.
So
there is sort of a distinction, and it's all artificial intelligence, but there is artificial intelligence with souls that is sapient and sentient, and there's artificial intelligence, which is
Alexa.
You can get an artificial intelligence for your ship, and it'll talk to you, but it's like the computer on a Star Trek ship. It's not a...
Are you telling me that the Star Trek ships don't... what?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Some people use the term virtual intelligence to make that distinction.
Yeah.
We haven't used that exact language in our game, but that distinction does exist.
Yeah, there is a threshold at which it stops being, you know, Siri and starts being a person. Yeah.
Both in the world, like they said, with androids not gaining citizenship in the Aslanti Star Empire, because they're bad guys, they do not consider androids sentient at all. And that's kind of a weird thing. So that is something that's kind of played with. Where do you draw the line within the setting?
And there's certainly a lot of source material to draw from for your own campaigns in real sci-fi literature about that, you know, anything Asimov wrote, basically. That's it. So thank you all for coming.
Thank you, everybody.
If you have additional questions, you can always ask those on the Paizo message boards, or if you see any of us around the rest of the con, feel free to bring those up. Thank you.
Conspectus is up.
Yeah, and everyone can grab a free conspectus, which is a nice little overview of the Starfinder setting, and it's got a cool poster in it, and they're right here on the front.
I worked on Keenic,
first chair up here. Go ahead and grab yourself a copy if you don't already have one.
Thanks.